guys. Welcome back to this week's episode of Millennial Mirrors, a discussion on millennial life in the Middle East. Our episode today is going to be about conflict with culture. It's something we see all the time in the region where people feel torn apart between what they want to do and what their cultures and traditions deem acceptable or unacceptable. So for me, culture is an important topic that I see popping up a lot in the work I do in both the private and public sector working with leaders. Whenever people are challenged to do something that they don't want to do or they deem to be too difficult, I hear the phrase, "No, this will never work in our culture," or "We cannot do this in our culture," and it drives me absolutely crazy. So to discuss culture with me today, we have Mohammed Nseba and Nizar Saleh, who are the guys behind Naqashna, a platform for community debate in Kuwait. Welcome, guys. Thanks for being on the podcast. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourselves and Naqashna?
Thank you, Mashari. Thank you for having us. I am Nizar Saleh. I'm an entrepreneur. I dedicate my life to try and solve problems of different sorts. But Naqashna was a different thing for me. Naqashna was to try and solve a problem, you know, without the motive of business, without the motive of money. It was just to try and talk, to overcome the obstacles of communication and try to hear other people out. It came out of something very simple, which is I want to hear other people's opinions without any hate, without any, hard feelings.
Okay. And what about you, Mohammed?
I'm Mohammed Nseba. I am in the oil and gas industry. And I moved back to Kuwait when I was 27. I basically spent 9 years in the U.S. I studied there. I worked there for about 4.5 years. And I was there for three presidential elections. And I got to see debate in terms on the presidential level. I got to see discussion, politics at different levels. So when I moved back, I think it was one or two episodes where there was a parliamentary election. And I noticed that the level of disagreement was very personal. People, took things personally. There was ad hominems everywhere. And the level of dissent or the level of discussion wasn't to the level that I feel was productive, was useful. And that really started the ball rolling. And it was a lunch I had with Nizar, and there was my colleague at work, Abdallah Lugman. Mm-hmm. The three of us actually came up with the idea that, hey, why don't we start a platform where we throw out controversial local topics that are relevant to us, and let's hear different opinions. The idea here is we're all surrounded by social circles, and more or less our social circles, give or take, pretty much think like us. That's why we hang out with them. That's why we chose to be their friends, right? And the idea here is what we wanted to do is bring together all these different social circles that make up society. So we give everybody an opportunity to hear something different that they don't hear on a day-to-day basis, a new idea, a new way of thinking. And basically, so we can either accept it, we can either not accept it, but respect it. And that really is the idea behind Naqashna.
So what are some of the things that surprised you guys about the debates?
You want to take this one?
Sure.
I'll jump in.
Personally, main thing that surprised me was the reaction of the crowd.
Okay.
Absolutely. This is something that I could have never predicted. One specific incident was either the second or third debate, you help me out, Mohammed, yep. Which was giving the nationality or the Kuwaiti citizenship to kids of Kuwaiti females. Mm-hmm. So essentially females that marry non-Kuwaitis can't give the citizenship to their kids,
right.
Whereas a male that marries a non-Kuwaiti can. So the debate was, are you for or against a Kuwaiti female giving citizenship to a kid? One comment after the debate was from a guy my age, mm-hmm. with a Kuwaiti mother, non-Kuwaiti father. And he was very open and honest and said, am I not entitled to be a Kuwaiti? I was born here. My mother is Kuwaiti. Everything I know is about Kuwait. And that hit me. To hear him open up such a personal part and to hear how people had, whether it was this topic or others, but people had a lot they want to say. And that was the main thing that shocked me about Niqashna, how much people wanted to talk.
And let me jump in, because part of the debates is not just to hear the speakers. Part of it is to open it up to the crowd so that the different social circles can get involved, can speak, can talk, and exchange ideas. One thing that surprised me is the amount of intellectual material that comes in from the audience. Very well read, very well researched, great questions. And in that specific debate, which Nizar was referring to, people were living a certain situation, so it was very personal to them, but yet maintained composure, very classy with asking questions, even though the other side was, you know, arguing or debating, is the word, against their personal situation.
Right.
To me, that's a testament to both the actual people in the crowd, which represent society, and, you know, credit goes to Nizar for maintaining tone, giving a nice soothing introduction, introducing why topics are introduced, tying it to our day-to-day life, and so on.
So what's the hottest topic you guys have had?
I'd say Fasl al-Din an al-Dawla, separation of religion,
religion and state.
I'd say hands down that was the most controversial one. I remember just walking in before starting. It was like 5 minutes before kickoff, and I walk over to Nizar, and we both just kind of looked at each other. Abdullah's with us too, all three of us. And I looked at Nizar and I said, "You feel that?"
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "I do." And he's talking about the tension in the air. Mm-hmm. Nobody was saying a word from the audience. Everybody's just sitting and waiting. But it was just pure tension. And when the debate actually kicked off and Nizar did his introduction and whatnot, I was sitting in the back and I wasn't looking at the debate per se. All I was doing was looking at the audience. I was just sitting there observing the audience and seeing how they were taking, because, you know, we're talking about religion here. Mm-hmm. People are raised, born, have strong feelings towards religion. It's a belief. It's the way people have lived, you know, it's a belief system that shapes the way people act, etc. And so anytime that's being discussed, even, you know, we're not discussing religion itself, but we're talking about it in a political sense, that still hits home and that's still personal to a lot of people.
And what was the reaction from, I guess, the audience during that debate, considering how, I guess, tense the topic was?
In the beginning, I'd say it was polarized. Huh?
Mm.
Yeah, people came. The for were sitting on one side of the room. The against were sitting on the other side of the room. As the debate slowly unraveled, people still stuck to their beliefs. Huh? This is not something that you'd hear a debate and you'd jump, whereas other topics you might do that. But close to the end of the debate, you know, you'd see that at least they started appreciating, okay, that this person, you know, was in front of us talking, etc., etc. And we tried to push that. Listen, at the end, we're doing this for all of us. It's not to say that this is right or this is wrong.
Yeah.
We all want to hear each other out. So close to the end, I felt that there was, you know, hey, okay, I kind of heard you out. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I attended your last debate, and I think the framing you guys use is very, very important, because it kind of sets the stage for, guys, we are here to have a conversation.
Yeah.
We are not here to say one side is right and one side is wrong. I mean, that's one of the reasons also why I dedicated like a whole episode at the beginning of the podcast series, just talking about why I'm doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And how I'm not saying we have any answers. I'm not saying we're arguing against this or we're saying this. I'm just saying have a conversation about the different things that are going on in your life at the moment, whether it be culture or independence or what have you.
Definitely.
Mishad, if you don't mind me jumping in.
Go ahead.
One interesting thing I felt out of that debate is it highlighted in the end of the debate that as polarizing as both sides seem, they actually agree on a lot of things. And some of the insecurities and fears one side had of the other also had, you know, of the other side. And I felt they both kind of reassured each other. So let me give you an example. Mm. You know, the secular side were always fearful of like extremist states that you know could practice you know extreme versions of religion, which could lead to you know models of government like our surrounding states,
mm-hmm.
and you know the religious side had the fear that the seculars wanted to erase religion off mm-hmm. the map. And I felt both sides addressed that insecurity the other side felt. So I felt we walked away from the debate where both sides were kind of brought that closer
moved
together.
A little closer.
And I felt good about that.
So what do you see as some of the biggest cultural shifts happening in our society today?
You want me to jump on that?
Sure.
Okay. I believe that what I've, from my opinion, is people have become more outspoken, have been more comfortable challenging the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's because of the introduction of social media over the last few years, whether it's because of you know the neighboring situation politically that's been happening around us, but. In general, or because, you know, more people have been traveling over the last 10, 15 years or, you know, going to universities abroad, bringing some of that culture back. But the culture of just blindly accepting things because that's the way it is, I feel that's kind of shifting. That's not to say one side, you know, one thing has been right or wrong. It's more of asking why. You know, this has been done this way for a long time. Why? And I think that last debate kind of showed that, where it was about freedom of speech. And I think one of the debaters was saying, well, if you're happy with the way you're doing things and you're convinced with the way you're doing things, what's the issue if the other side disagrees or challenges or? And so essentially what he was doing is he was asking why.
Mm-hmm.
But dissent, you know, against culture in public platforms, I don't think was as prevalent, you know, 5-10 years ago.
Okay, so moving on to and shifting gears a bit, do you think that sometimes people confuse culture with comfort zone and use it as a sort of get out of jail free card?
Can you elaborate on get out of jail free?
As in, this is making me uncomfortable. I don't want to have to face. People saying things or people talking about it, and so I'd rather just say, no, this is against our culture, rather than trying to actually think about what are the real reasons why I don't want to do something.
Let me jump in. I think we actually faced that in our first debate topic. When we were trying to find a venue to host us, first venue we approached was Shaheed Park, and they asked us, well, what's your topic? We said it was the marriage topic, mm-hmm. traditional marriage versus love marriage. And that topic was deemed, you know, controversial, and we were asked to maybe find another topic that was a bit softer. But I think that speaks to a culture of you know, avoiding to any topic that you know, might have been touching politics, might have been touching religion or even culture itself. But without actually thinking about what the themes are, what the mission was, what the intent of the discussion was, just blindly hearing the framing of a topic was an automatic rejection. And I think that's a microcosm of our society. You can extrapolate that, use that at work. You know, any big organization, Kuwait, that's in the government sector, a lot of times you ask yourself, well, what are we doing this for? What's the step for? Well, that's because the way we, you know, that's how it's always been done. You know, you get 10 stamps, you get 10, signatures here and there, take this here. You can probably cut out a lot of fat, but that's just the way we're programmed. This is how it's done. And sometimes we don't know otherwise.
So what, in your opinion, is a step in a direction away from that?
Well, I actually think what we're doing is a first step. It's choosing topics that are just not discussed in public. They're discussed privately in diwaniyas and in private settings. But would you ever have someone come on a public platform and calling for separating, you know, state and religion? Probably not. Maybe in a studio with commercial breaks and stuff like that. But in public, you don't know who's coming from the crowd. You don't know what you're going to be asked. I remember, actually, one of our debaters, she was pretty nervous before the debate. And I asked her, I said, well, you've been on TV a million times. You're a public figure. And she said, no, but this is different.
Yeah.
You know, it's the public. It could be 400 people. It could be 100 people, you know, 100 people. You don't know what they're going to ask you. You're betting that Nizar is going to keep everything under control. And to be frank, it's a good bet. So I think that is actually a good step in the right direction.
And just to add on to what she said, I mean, there was a question at the last debate, which was about freedom of speech, from one of the guests, and I still remember it because she was like, do you guarantee if I say what I have to say that I would walk out of here safe? Mm-hmm. And in my head, I had two questions.
One was, what are you going to say?
What are you going to say? And then two is, who do you think we are? Like, you know, that's to that extent that we're just going to, like, attack you and just, like, rip you limb from limb. Mm-hmm. I think there is this fear that's been embedded in people from such a young age of, you know, don't step outside of what's culturally appropriate.
Right.
And there's this boogeyman that's outside of what's culturally appropriate.
Right.
But no one really knows what that boogeyman is. We're just kind of afraid of it, and we don't really know what necessarily the consequences will be. We have a vague idea. Okay, no, well, people will talk, or I'll get ostracized, or, you know, so-and-so will say so-and-so to so-and-so, and things like that. But you don't really have a full-fledged idea of how bad the consequences could be. We just are told from very young age that's very, very bad, so don't do it to a certain extent. Yeah. Does that make sense?
It does, because if you dig deeper, what happens is, unfortunately, what happens a lot is we put people in buckets.
Mm.
And the way you're labeled follows you around, and socially, sometimes also where you work, etc. And, you know, a lot of the times when you talk about socially, whether it's marriage or whatnot, a lot of it's done based on word of mouth, reputation, background checks, etc. And so there's always this fear to deviate from the expectation, you know, to not hurt your chances or tarnish your reputation or for any being outcasted in society and potentially losing. The reputation's big in the society.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Nizar? Anything I missed?
Not that you missed, but I have a little bit of a different perspective.
Okay.
But before I jump into that, if you don't mind just repeating the question, so I answer you head on.
Sure. I don't remember what the question. Wait,
the
is
question,
this the, did you get out of jail?
The initial question. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, do you think that sometimes people confuse culture with comfort zone,
okay,
and use it as a sort of get out of jail free card?
Okay. Sure. I personally think culture became culture for a reason.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. And it's not a coincidence that this is our culture today. It's based on years of practice. Happened right, things happened wrong, and slowly that developed into, okay, this is the way it is. And maybe part of the culture is to stay in your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe they're not two separate things.
Right. Huh?
This is my culture, so and it's a comfortable culture. خلاص, I don't want to challenge that. Why should I? Because maybe history told me if I challenge that, maybe I'm digging a little bit into history, huh? But 150 years ago, if I challenge my culture, I'm outside of that tribe, so I'm out on my own, and my survival is at risk.
Correct.
They're not that separate. That's one perspective I wanted to include in the answer. That doesn't mean or. Your follow-up question to Muhammad was, how do we get out of that?
Mm.
I don't think we have to get out of it unless the situation asks us to redefine our culture. And that's what we've been living, I think, in the last decade or so. There are different socioeconomic factors. There are different ways of living, different, due to globalization, you encounter different people, culture, etc. So we are now at a point where we have to redefine. Mm-hmm. And that's why we are forced to tweak. It's not because our culture is bad and let's, no, but it's a natural part of adaptation.
So I think in response to that, I completely, first of all, agree. I mean, of course, the culture formed for a reason, and especially back in the day, you can't break culture because societies, people depend on each other to survive. I think when I say, I don't want to ever say let's break culture or let's change culture, because I actually really love the culture we come from, because I feel like there's a lot of strength to be had from that culture. Mm-hmm. My point is that I feel, whereas if you look at other places in the world, I feel like here in our Middle Eastern society and our Middle Eastern culture, we use the phrase, we can't do this because of our culture.
Fair.
And that's, I think, where my issue lies.
Yeah, yeah, fair.
Because culture, at least in my opinion, and we can debate this, mm-hmm. and I'd love to hear your opinion. Culture, in my opinion, is not static. Culture shifts. And if I was going to look at my parents when they were my age and what culture was for them, mm-hmm. it's very different than what culture is for me now. And so it's that statement of, we can't do this because of our culture, that I'm not a big fan of, because I think culture is always evolving and always changing. So if you're scared to do something just out of fear of breaking norms, that's not the right reason not to do it.
I completely agree. I think it could be part of a reason, but not the only reason, definitely, 100%. And I also do agree that that culture is not a static thing. And the point of time that we are in today is forcing us to redefine these things. I might be going off on a tangent here, but it's what breeds responses that are, let's not do this because of culture only, I think is engraved in the education system, believe it or not.
Okay.
Because I believe the education system does not build you up to be a critical thinker. It builds you up to memorize and, you know, go ahead and write down what you memorized or say it out loud or whatever. So we are not forced or cornered to reevaluate, to rethink. And I believe that's why you get answers like culture. That's why you get answers like religion. And then there's a period after that word. There's no explanation. I think that's part of why, at least.
I love that. Actually, I think that makes a lot of sense. So then let's delve a bit more deeper into that, considering the fact, I mean, we had the same education system, like you're talking about, where we're not really taught to think critically. Yet our generation, I feel, is challenging culture. Here we are, we're sitting, we're talking, we're having a podcast about culture. You guys are having debates about the different things that are happening in society. Why do you think we're at this kind of apex where everyone's kind of feeling, okay, no, we need to have a talk about this? And I don't, and it's not just happening in Kuwait. I feel like it's happening all around the region. So what do you think are kind of the colliding reasons for that, if that makes sense?
Can I jump in, if you don't
yeah,
mind?
Yeah, jump in.
Kuwait and its neighbors are being forced mainly because of what the internet brought to us.
Okay.
The last 20 years, you are allowed to access information however you please and read whatever you want to read. Nobody tells you, hey, this is right, this is wrong. Mm-hmm. You're at the mercy of your mobile and what you choose to click.
Right.
And that forced cultures like Kuwait that have these habits engraved in them, and forced societies that don't have these habits engraved in them, which are our neighbors. You still see that redefining culture, even though it's in a different way, it's still happening. And I think that's mainly due to the easy access to information.
Yeah, no, I mean, I completely agree. The title of this episode is That's Just the Way It Is. Mm-hmm. And I think That's Just the Way It is a very easy statement to believe when you don't have access to information of why that's not the case. Mm-hmm. But now you could easily be like, actually, here's an article that says otherwise. So, you know what? No, I don't have to believe That's Just the Way It Is. I can sit here and debate you.
But there's a lot of value in the system that we have here. Mm-hmm. Because it allows individuals to think differently and challenge. Mm-hmm. So we talked about cultural red lines. You know, legally you can get away with saying it. Like that woman from the debate with a question or a comment. She said, I don't know if I walk out of here alive, she said.
Yeah.
Legally she'd be okay. There'd be no issue. But what she was referring to is socially, according to culture, according to taboos that she has in her mind.
Are you sure legally? Depends on what she has to say, huh?
Well...
Quite frankly, Annie.
Well,
it was about belief, maybe religion, and if you...
Well, I think the legal red lines are very clear here. Mm. You know, everybody knows them. You can count them on one finger, right? But I think the context she was referring to, she actually said she'd lose her friends, she'd lose her family.
Mm.
So her friends and family, basically she was insinuating fear of judgment, in my opinion. We'll never know. Maybe one day we'll get a hold of her and ask her. Now I'm curious.
So do you think social judgment is a big factor? A bigger factor than legal judgment in our culture?
Huge.
There's a saying, and I'm going to say it in Arabic. If time doesn't abide by your rules, you abide by its rules. Which is basically, if you know this is what's happening... then do it.
I like that. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, in terms of the cultural red lines, we had a debate on the islands, developing the islands, whether open tourism should be used for the islands.
Hmm.
And by open tourism, we're obviously referring to the Dubai model, where there'd be resorts, potential nightlife, etc., with all the stuff that come with it. So we had a yes side and a no side, obviously. The yes side, when he came to state his position, his way of saying yes was, I'm not with the nightlife and I'm not against it.
Mm.
I'm with what the studies indicate.
Okay.
So that was his way of protecting himself culturally, socially, but yet telling us that he genuinely wants to open it up.
So it's not me saying this, it's the facts.
The studies. Don't ask me, ask the studies.
Yeah.
So obviously the other side would be a straightforward no.
Hmm.
But that was his way of saying yes to his comfort level.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we have in society. And I guess that goes back to that trumping legal.
Hmm. So in your opinion... And this is if someone wants to, let's say. Because, I mean, like we said, it depends on whether this is working for you, whether this is not working for you, whether there's something you want to do but you're feeling uncomfortable, or whether you're happy with the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
How does one get out of that's just the way it is mindset to the this is the way things could be mindset?
Deep question. When you're forced to reevaluate and rethink yourself, rethink your values, I think that's the only time it's gonna make sense for you to say, okay, that's not the way it is, this is the way it could be. Because I think the way it is happened that way also.
Mm.
They were under immense pressure that they needed to find a haven, and that's how they came to that haven. They were challenged once and twice. خلاص, يعني life was too tough in this part, that they had to figure it out, and these situations are the only time, in my opinion.
And that's the way it is, usually stems off of people looking at their surroundings and picking off things from them. Like I mentioned in the beginning, we usually hang out with like-minded people.
Right.
And we think our circles are a microcosm of society, but that's far from the truth. There are people in society, there are groups in society that exist probably in majorities that, you know, none of us are aware of and or don't interact with on a day-to-day. So in my opinion, the shift towards this is how it could be is for people to engage and interact with different groups, different thinking people. You might say, well, you do that at work, but not really, not necessarily.
Stays on a shallow kind
of level. Stays on a shallow, stay away from politics, stay away from religion, stay away from culture. And you also tend, most of the time, to work in places with people.
So, similar.
So, for example, if you went to a university out in the West in finance or whatever, and you get into investment banking, you're probably going to have like-minded people who also went to Western universities, etc. And if you work for a government entity, same thing. The standard deviation is small,
right?
And really, that was the whole point of our platform. We wanted to hear from everybody, and so when people start hearing different ideas and opinions, they start appreciating difference. They start appreciating ideas, and you know what? When ideas bounce off, even partial ideas start to make sense, and a tolerance level towards opposing views starts developing, and that really starts the conversation at a higher level. And people can start gravitating towards thinking about what could be.
Well, that leads me to my last question, actually, which is, what is the lasting impact you would love to have from Niqashna?
Go back to the previous question.
Right.
We have time, yeah?
Yeah,
okay.
Go for it.
I'm going to tell you a small story because I love hearing it.
Yeah.
It's a story my grandfather always tells me. It's about, you know, his time, Kuwait, when he was my age or a bit younger.
Right.
The way he says it is, my father, maybe not his father, but, you know, the economy back then was split into summer months and winter months. Summer months, they'd go pearl diving, 4 months, and then go to India, give them the pearls. And the way he'd say it is, we'd go pearl diving, and the pearls are not for our wives. You know, they are for trade, so we can get spices, so we can get wood, so we can get etc., etc.
Amazing.
And they'd come back with these things. They'd take only what they needed to take, and then the rest, during the winter, they'd go up to Iraq to Sham, and trade there again, and get vegetables, get fruits, get things that don't grow in this part of the world.
Right.
So the reason I bring the story up is the way it is because there is no other way back then.
Right.
If there was, if it wasn't that way, they might not survive. It was up to that level. But that's why things are maybe so attached, and it's not like we had a choice.
Right.
So listen, don't think we did our homework, we tried, others tried and didn't succeed, so don't bother. That's just something I wanted
very
to add.
Very interesting.
And it's up to you if you want to.
No, that's a very interesting way of looking at it. We come from a culture where survival was the main aim of the game at that point. So you figured out how it worked, you stuck with how it worked, because if you didn't, you would die. And that's kind of the mental state that you kind of bring with you. Which makes sense. I mean, there are, for example, if you look at it, to flip it on the another side, I don't know how long we're going on this podcast, but anyway, I'll just this
quick
story.
Have to.
So I was having a conversation with a psychologist who was talking about an interesting study about how, for us, we come from people who only 2 or 3 generations ago were going through a lot of hardship to survive. And then now, as a generation, we have everything provided for us. And we're not genetically adjusted to that yet, if that makes sense. So you end up with a lot of people who have a very high level of anxiety, a very high level of unhappiness, and feeling aimless and not knowing what to do, because you were so you're so kind of designed for hardship that this whole sitting around and having everything handed to you on a silver platter, which if you're talking about the Gulf region specifically, happens a lot, not necessarily in other places in the Middle East, makes it difficult for you to kind of adjust mentally.
Definitely.
So no, I completely understand where you're coming from with that.
And now to answer, what are the long-lasting effects?
Yeah.
Okay, which relates to the story and relates to what Muhammad answered. Survival today is to remain relevant.
Right.
And to remain relevant, you need to communicate.
Right.
You need to understand different perspectives. You need to go out of your comfort zone. Because today it's not just, you know, my idea, my neighbor's idea, whoever. No, no. It's my idea and the guy in China's idea and the guy in the US's idea. We're all there. It's a level playing field. And to remain relevant means I need to exchange all these data points. I need to be open to them. I need to start implementing them, catering to them. And that's one of the... one of the main reasons why Niqashna is Niqashna and what I would like its effects to be is to help guide us through the point that we understand in order to survive, we need to stay relevant and we need to stay open to other people's points of view.
Amazing. Okay, well, thank you guys so much for being here. I know how busy you guys are. Where can people find out more about you guys and Niqashna online?
Well, we have social media, Instagram, and we recently launched Twitter.
Okay.
And we've got a YouTube channel. All three of those platforms at Niqashna, in English, Niqashna.
Amazing.
You can find some of our debates. We release them on YouTube. We haven't released them all. I think we've got three, and we're working on the fourth one, which you attended last time.
Watch it, guys. It's going to be amazing.
And then Twitter and
Instagram. And on Twitter, you guys have some interesting stuff because you have polls up there where you can see like by percentage how many people voted one way versus the other way.
Right, and we do the same on our Instagram story. And what we do is even topics that we don't debate, any hot topic in the public opinion, in the public's domain, we raise it. And we capture the opinion of our base, our followers, and we ask them to interact, to voice their opinions, and we start posting.
Amazing. Okay, well, thank you guys for being here.
Thank you, Mushad.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast, if you haven't already, on iTunes, SoundCloud, YouTube, and wherever you're listening to this. We'll be releasing a new episode every week. Also, please leave a comment. Let me know what you think, if you have any questions or if there are any subjects or topics that you think we should cover. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram @MishariAlanese. Links are in the episode description. Bye, guys, and stay safe.